John chapter 9. Gospel of John chapter 9. A little bit of warning for today. While we were at camp all week, God saw fit in His wonderful grace to give me a cold. Which, when I get colds, how many of you guys, you get a cold, you can just kind of let it pass, and you'll just get over it on your own and no problem, right? Go a couple days or 3-4 days, and you'll just get over it. I don't do that. I'm special. So I get a cold, and I get ear infections and sinus infections, and I have to go get antibiotics, and so that was me. So I'm still going to have a little cough and a little bit of noises, so hopefully you'll bear with me. John 9. There we go. So last week we talked, we're going to be in verses 1 through 7 again this week. We were in verse 1 through 7 last week, and some of you guys are like, whoa, dude, you're going through John 9, so slow, don't do the same verses over again. But we are. So we're going to be mostly in verses 4 and 5 this week, but I want to kind of give the context of verse 1 through 7. So let's read one more time to this morning, John chapter 9, verse 1 through 7, so you know what's kind of going on. Verse 1, as he passed by, he being Jesus, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but the works of God might be displayed in him. Verse 4, we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I'm the light of the world. Having said these things, he spat on the ground, made mud with saliva, and he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, in verse 7, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. We dealt with last week mostly verse 2. Jesus sees the blind man, the disciples see the blind man, and the disciples ask a question, who sinned, this man or his parents? And we talked about the assumption that the Jews in this culture had that because of a disability or a handicap or a problem, a struggle in life, it was because of sin. You sinned, therefore God did this in your life to judge you and to punish you. So that was the thought. Because this man was blind because he was a sinner, or his parents had sinned. That was the disciples' question. That was the disciples' thought. That's what they've been taught their whole life. And Jesus breaks that down in verse 3 and says, no, that's not how this works. This man is blind not because of his sin, because of his parents, just because he is blind because God chose to make him blind. We dealt a lot of that last week. And for a lot of you this morning, that really resonates home with you and resonates all of us. All of us come with a struggle. It's either a handicap or a sickness or a death in the family or something in life that we just don't like, what we wish we could get rid of, wish that we could not have. And there's those questions we all ask, God, why is this happening? Why are you allowing this? And we dealt with that last week. But verses 4 and 5, I'll read them one more time, verse 4 and 5. Jesus says this after verse 3, we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world. And in verse 6, he goes on to heal this blind man. We're going to spend most of our time in verse 4 and 5. If you have, in the back of your bulletin is just a blank piece of paper, pretty much. I was at camp. So I do have some points I want to give you. They'll be on the screen. You can fill them in as you go. So we're going to jump right into those. Two things I want to mostly kind of point our attention to this morning. One is this. Do you see the lost and hurting people around you? Do you see the lost and hurting people around you? Verse 1 picks up with Jesus. Jesus passed by and Jesus saw the blind man. Verse 2, the disciples ask a question. So you have Jesus and the disciples, both seeing this man who is blind, but both see him differently. Jesus sees him, and the only the eyes of Jesus can do, with compassion for him. The disciples see the blind man as a theological question. The disciples see the blind man as a object, not a person. Do you see the lost and hurting people around you? We're jumping right into it this morning. We're not gonna. We're just jumping right into the, you know, the hammer on the foot kind of stuff. So, the disciples saw him as a theological question, a subject of debate, but they did not see him as a hurting person, as a man who was struggling, a man who needed help. Every day of your life, you are surrounded by lost and hurting people. Spiritual lost people. And we're going to next week be in the same passage next week, verse 1 through 7. And we might go a little further at verse 12. But we're going to deal mostly with next week the physical healing of this man, dealing with that. But there are people every day of our lives that we come in contact with, we see, we have conversations with, coworkers, neighbors, so forth, that are spiritually lost. But they're also hurting. Physical hurt or mostly emotional, spiritual hurt. Their marriages aren't going well and their kids are not responding well, which most kids don't respond well. I spent all week at camp with a bunch of junior high boys. That was joyful. So, do you see him? Or do you see people who have made bad decisions and you judge them? Well, if they'd only done this differently or this differently, this life would have been turned out differently for them. Well, if they just do this and this and do A, B, C, this will turn out this way. That's how the disciples saw the blind man. Well, he's blind because he sinned. He's blind because his parents sinned. That's his punishment. That's what he gets. Moving on. Let's keep walking. Let's not help him. Let's not do anything for him. Hey, Jesus, can you heal that guy? Possibly, in the text, possibly if Christ had not healed him, the disciples would have moved on and walked away. There's a phrase that I heard at camp and I've heard on the radio this last couple of days, that the church is a hospital, not a museum. I want you to process that. The church is a hospital, not a museum. So I want you to kind of imagine, I went to the clinic this week in Salina. So I want you to imagine going to a hospital with a broken arm or a sickness, and they walk into the hospital and says, whoa, you got a broken arm, you can't be here. You got to leave. You got to go home, fix your broken arm, and come back. We want healthy people here. We want people who are healthy at this place, not the sick people. You'll get everybody else infected. As I'm sitting in the waiting room coughing and hacking up my lungs, I'm feeling bad. People are kind of moving chairs away from me like he's got like the Ebola or something. But you go to a hospital, you go to a doctor because you have a sickness, you have a problem, you have a pain, you have a hurt. The church is the same thing. But so many times, we expect people to come in here with their faces on. And this morning, you did that very same thing. You got out of the car, and you got to church, and as you're walking through the parking lot, okay, here we go. Take a breath. Change the face. Let's put on this facade. Let's put on this fake outer masquerade of that everything is okay, but deep down inside, it's not okay. It's just not. We've sinned. In reality, we've sinned. because there are people in our town that are lost, that are hurting, that are broken because of life, and we pass by them every day of our lives and never talk to them and never preach the God, never give the gospel to them, never lend a helping hand to them, never do anything for them. And myself included in this discussion, we raise the big doctrinal theological questions. Well, what if God does this, or what if this happens? Or we want to try to put them in a box, and this is how God works. And well, we can't do that because of this theological position. Or what if we give them false hope or false assurance, or all the while we're failing to do anything? I love theology. I love doctrine, and I will preach and teach and talk about theology and doctrine all the time, and we're never going to get away from that. And I hope that High Plains has a reputation in Hayes of being the theological doctrinal church. But if it's all we're known as, we've missed it. We don't want to be the obese, spiritually obese, consuming, never giving back. Do you see the lost and hurting people around you? Question, who in your life are you having gospel conversations with? I've used that phrase numerous times in the past. Who are you speaking truth into? Who are you inviting to church? Maybe, just possibly, we should use that as a prerequisite for any complaints. Before you have a criticism, I'm going to ask the question, who are you preaching the gospel to? Who are you inviting to church? Who are you witnessing to? Before you complain about what we're doing, I want to see first that you're actually doing something yourself. Maybe, just maybe we'll do that. Second point. It might be a short sermon, just so y'all prepared. We must work while it is still day. Verse 4 and 5. Verse 4. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. So Jesus is responding to the disciples. Their question about the man born blind. Why was he born blind? And Christ says in verse 4, we must work the works of him who sent me. Who sent Jesus? God the Father. Okay, right? So what is he talking about? God sent Jesus to earth with a list of things to do, his to-do list. And this blind man falls on the list of things to do. So when Jesus saw the blind man, Jesus saw him first. Now, there are other stories of Jesus healing blind men, and we'll look at those more next week. But some of those stories, the blind man will call out to Jesus, hey, Son of David, have mercy on me. Hey, Jesus, heal me. Come heal my blindness. That's a different situation, and we'll discuss those a little bit more. But this one, Jesus saw him first. Jesus was sent at this moment to heal this blind man. He was there to do this miracle. But he's also here to teach his disciples a lesson. He's doing two things. I guess one, killing two birds with one stone. He's doing two things. He's going to heal this blind man, and he's also going to teach his disciples a lesson. Back in verse 4. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. So Christ uses the phrase of night and day. While it is day. We must work while it is day. And you might understand that in concept, because if you're going to do yard work or do anything outside work, it's easier to do it in the daylight, not in the dark, right? Now, we have the ability to have lights and have flashlights and all those things to help us with that, but in general terms, we want to work in the day, not in the night. So what is Christ referring to as day and night? Here's what it is. His life and his death. So he is here, he was there to do his work while it is still day, while he is still alive. But night is coming when no one can work. Night is coming when Christ is going to die on a cross. And there, when he dies on the cross, his work is complete. His work is finished. It is finished. His ultimate goal is to go to a cross and die. That's the ultimate thing on his list of things to do. But once he gets to that point, he's done. His work is over. So this blind man just falls again in the list of things he has to get accomplished. There's also a point for us out of this one. We must work the works. Verse 4. We must work the works. Catch that? Circle, underline, highlight that word we in verse 4. We must work the works. Who's he speaking to? His disciples. What are we as born-again believers? His disciples. So we must work the works of him who sent us. Who sent us? God has sent us. While it's still day, because night is coming. So what is the day and night in our life? The same it was for Jesus, our life and our death. So while we still have life in us, we are called to do the work God has sent us to do until day and night comes when we're dead and we're retired. Again, the little cliche thing, there's no retirement in the Bible. There's no, well, I've accomplished this, I've done this, I did Kids for Truth, I did Awanas years ago, I did children ministry, I did nursery a long time ago. Now I don't do it anymore because I'm older now. Now it's the young person's job to do this stuff. That's a cop-out. That's a sinful cop-out. And that's not in the Bible. And you need to repent. Until you're dead, you have a job to do. You know, but my grandfather passed away a few weeks ago, went to his funeral and so forth. But my grandfather, while he was in a nursing home, he would get my grandmother in her wheelchair and load her up in the car, and he could barely walk himself, get in the car, and he should not be driving. It was the grace of God that he didn't kill anybody. And he would go make visits to people in the hospitals, other nursing homes. Here, an 88-year-old man and my grandmother, who's in a wheelchair, pushing her around. He can barely push her around, and going making visits in the hospitals. He wasn't dead yet, so he had something to do. We must work while it is still day. We must make full use of every opportunity while we have it, because we're not guaranteed to have the next one. Jesus is teaching his disciples to spend their lives doing God's work. To spend their lives doing God's work. So here's the challenge. Here's one of the challenges I'm going to give you. I might give you four or five more. I'm not sure how it's going to go yet. But as you go to work and you do your job and you do your occupation, you are there not to get a paycheck. You are there to do your occupation while you're doing God's work alongside it. So God has put you in your position, in your occupation, to be salt and light to those that you work with. See how that works? We don't want to separate our employment from our Christian witness. Well, I go to work, I do my job, I be quiet, I don't make any noises, I don't cause any conversations, I don't want that hassle and that burden or that rejection. I'll be a witness when I'm at church. Well, you're missing a lot of the point of why God puts you where he puts you. We must work the work of him who sent us while it is still day, because night is coming when no one can work. You must work the work God has sent you to, God put you into, while it's still day, because night is coming when you can no longer work. There's no spectators in the church. This is not an event you come to or something you get a part of and you spectate and you watch from the sidelines. This is something that you fill your water guns up and you charge hell with us. Because what we're doing is serious business. What we're doing is eternal value. What we're doing in High Plains, what I hope we're doing here at this church, is the most important thing in the world. So I want you to ponder that for a moment. If the Bible is true, which I believe it is, the Bible is true, and Christ is who he says he is, which I believe he is true, he is who he says he is, and there is an eternal heaven, and there is an eternal hell, and we're all going to die and go to one of those two places, and you're going to spend eternity with God or apart from God, and eternity is longer than this life, what is more important than eternity? Track that? Check your heads if you're with me, okay? So what is more valuable? Your occupation now that you're working to make a living and to feed your family and to pay your bills, or the eternal home that you're going into? What's more valuable? What's more important? A poem. Or a song or something by C.T. Studd. Maybe you've known it. Maybe you've heard it. Two little lines I heard one day, traveling along life's busy way, bringing conviction to my heart, for my mind would not depart. Only one life 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, yes, only one. Soon will it be, its fleeting hours be done. That in that day my Lord to meet and stand before his judgment seat. Only one life 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, the still small voice, gently pleads for a better choice. Biding me selfish aims to leave and to God's holy will to cleave. Only one life 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, a few brief years, each with its burdens, hopes, and fears, each with its clays I must fulfill, living for self or in his will. Only one life will soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. When this bright world would tempt me sore, when Satan would a victory score, when self would seek to have its way, when help me, Lord, with joy to say, only one life will soon be past, only what's done for Christ will last. Give me, Father, a pure purpose deep, in joy or sorrow thy word to keep, faithful and true, whatever the strife, pleasing thee in my daily life. Only one life 'twill soon be past. Only what done for Christ will last. Oh, let my love with fervor burn, and from the world never let me turn, living for thee and thee alone, bringing thee pleasure on thy throne. Only one life 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, yes, only one. Now let me say, thy will be done. And when at last I'll hear the call, I know I'll say, 'twas worth it all. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. What are you doing? What ministries are you a part of at this church? Where are you serving? Let me ask this question. This is a big question. I hope I don't offend you. And maybe I do. I don't know. Are you a taker or are you a giver? Two separate people, takers and givers. Do you come and you take, consume, or do you give? Christ was a giver. Christ came to give. He could have come to take, but he came to give. As we give our lives back to him, and you come to this church, and you go out in your workplace, and your job, and your family life, and whatever it looks like for you, are you going to give the gospel, give salvation? Are you going to see the lost and hurting people around you? Or are you like the disciples did at that moment in their life? Are you going to see them as objects of discussion, objects of judgment? Let's pray. Father, I'm the worst sinner here. I beg you to forgive me my failures. To break our hearts for the gospel, to break our hearts for those who need it, need to hear it. And we are the vehicles, we are the vessels that you are choosing to use in this, in our city, in our homes, in our workplaces to give the gospel to those who need to hear it. Give us passion. Give us a burden. Give us an unquenchable conviction to be salt and light. Keep us awake at night for those that we know are lost. Thank you for the gospel. I thank you for opening my blind eyes to the truth of my sinful heart. For those that are born again believers here, I thank you for opening their eyes. If there's anyone here that does not know you as Lord and King, has not confessed you as being Messiah, I want to pray you open their eyes to the truth. Save their souls. Call us to your work. And all the glory and all the honor belongs to you and you alone. We deserve nothing of it. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.